Nick DeGiglio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower, and it is after midnight on a Friday night, which of course means, if you're a regular listener, that you know that it is time for the Midnight Movie Reviews. Eric Childress, Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com always join me for our Midnight Movie Reviews. And if you've seen any movies or you got a comment or a question movie-related, you can call 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can also leave your comments, facebook.com/NickDShow, and send your text to 24720. So, 312-981-7200, let's make it official movie time. Midnight Movie Reviews, every Friday night at midnight, we like to help you guys out with your weekend and movies that you can see in the theater and also movies that you can see on demand. We cover those as well. If you've seen anything and you want to jump in, you can call us at 312-981-7200, and let's get Colin and Eric on. Colin, how are you?
Good, how are you?
All right, and Eric, how you been? How you
doing? Okay.
All right. So we have some stuff to talk about, including a couple of films that are playing exclusively at the Patio Theater. Dimitri over at the Patio Theater is doing some great stuff with programming, and he is premiering the film by Brandon Cronenberg.
Oh, Antiviral.
Yeah, he's doing Antiviral at the Patio this weekend and during the week. So that's going to be playing there, and it's also going to be playing with It's a Disaster, which is the David Cross, Julia Stiles ensemble comedy about the end of the world. So we'll be talking about those things that are exclusively happening at the Patio. And, you know, they continue to do really cool stuff over there. They're programming a lot of really cool stuff. And it's really exciting because it's such a cool neighborhood theater, beautiful, old school, just a great theater. And so, yeah, so right over there on Irving and Austin in Chicago, check out patiotheater.net for more information. But, yeah, we'll talk about those movies as well. We got some on-demand stuff to talk about. Two, but let's first do a recap of the first ever Chicago Critics Film Fest, which took place last weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, at the MovieCo Theater in Rosemont. Eric, why don't you tell us how it went?
Well, I am happy to report that it was a success for us, for the Chicago Film Critics Association. The crew that put this thing together, and including myself and Colin, worked our butts off all weekend, and the attendees made it very easy because they were all there. They were very passionate about the movies they were coming to see. They were happy to take recommendations. They were just hanging around, staying all day. We got sort of more attendance as the weekend went on. And it was you know, it wasn't the largest crowd in the world for every movie. You know, some obviously, you know, everyone picks and chooses their pleasure. But everyone who came out of the movies were very happy with the choices for us to introduce them to a number of these films, just like the Patio's doing, that, you know, they're not going to get a chance to see in Chicago for a while or maybe ever.
Yeah.
So. And Colin, we were very happy with the response.
Colin, how did the shorts program turn out for you?
Very well, very well. You know, good turnout. You know, you know, usually what, like, if you're at a film festival and you go see a block of short films instead of going to see a feature film, you're really taking the road less traveled. And I was happy to see that that people really turned out and were curious and wanted to see, you know, just kind of do something that's a little off the beaten path. So I was very pleased with the turnout, very pleased, especially since, I mean, I've been wanting people to see these short films for the past couple months now that I've, you know, that I've had them in, all in my possession. I've had them lined up and ready to go, and just, you know, people would show up because they're so good.
Yeah,
and they did. So I was very
happy. That's great, man. That's really great to hear. And you know, because of the turnout and the feedback, Eric, are you guys thinking about making this an annual event possibly?
Yes. It looks like that is going to happen. We're already talking about next year. We were talking about next year at the festival,
wow,
as a matter of fact. And the support we got not only from the people who attended, but particularly the, you know, the celebrity guests that we had. Sarah Polley opening night was just killer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she knocked the Q&A out of the park. I mean, as good as the questions I think were, she gave even, you know, even more tremendous answers. And seemed very happy and very gracious to be one of the very first people to be asked. And basically, you know, her film opened this event.
Right.
You know? So from now on, she's going to be associated with this event. And she tweeted some very nice things. The cast of Sparks, who you had on.
Yeah, those guys
were great. I had him tell the Kung Fu story at the Q&A, which was fabulous. So no, William Cadd, Chris Foligno, and Jake Busey, it's all such great guys.
Yeah.
So nice and fun to hang around with. And then William Friedkin, Sunday night. William Friedkin came, signed books for nearly 2 hours, was very happy that we were able to get him some Giordano's pizza for dinner, and then presented practically a mint 35mm print of Sorcerer. I mean, it was nearly flawless.
Yeah.
And then did a Q&A for over an hour.
Wow. Wow.
And ended the night couldn't have ended the night and the festival more perfectly by reciting Dylan Thomas for Roger Ebert.
Oh man, wow!
Yeah, which is Colin. There's all that stuff up on the website now. Some of those clips.
The Friedkin's little tribute to Roger Ebert I see on the front page of the website, but the clip that I posted last night is not on the website yet. And but you can look it up on YouTube. It's pretty easy to find. Look up William Friedkin talks about Exorcist 2. You will hear one of the funniest stories you've ever heard about The Exorcist.
Great.
It is fantastic.
That's awesome.
And Sarah Polley's Q&A is up on YouTube, right, too, Colin?
No.
Oh, not yet.
Okay.
No.
So these things, they'll be easy to find on YouTube, and also we'll make a link on our Facebook page so people can easily check it out. Well, I will say this, you know, Friedkin was unbelievable on the show. What an unbelievable guest this guy was.
Yeah.
Told great stories, answered all the questions. We did 10 minutes on cruising.
Nice.
You know what I mean? And he talked about it, you know, like honestly and openly and you know, the trouble that he had, you know, he and Pacino had on the set and, you know, getting along and all the protests and everything and how you know, it really affected the film. And he didn't back off from any of the questions about cruising. I mean, it was like, boom. And you know, I don't know if he was surprised that I asked about cruising, but I find that to be a really fascinating film. And I got a chance to talk to the guy who made it. I was, you know, because all these years I found that movie to be, I just find it really fascinating and strange and, to me, every time I've seen Cruising a bunch of times, and every time I see it, I find it more interesting each time I see it. And I think it got a really unfair rap when it came out. And so, but we talked about everything from To Live and Die in L.A. You know, I didn't get to mention Deal of the Century, which I was very upset about. I just wanted to see what it was like to work with Paul Brickman. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You know, but no, he was great, and it doesn't surprise me that he, you know, did a kick-ass Q&A and did a great job because he was full. I had him on for like a full hour.
We had one. There was one guy who drove in from Tennessee to see Sorcerer.
Wow.
Just to see that print.
Well, it's Sorcerer, for those of you who don't know, 1977.
Yep.
I believe, film with Roy Scheider, remake of Wages of Fear, one of Friedkin's favorite films of all time that actually got him into movies, and a tremendous, a terrific movie. Another movie that kind of got browbeaten when it came out. Not a lot of people saw it. I think a lot of people thought because it was Friedkin's name and because the title was Sorcerer that they were going to see a horror film. And, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, did think, oh, it was William, the director of The Exorcist. It's called Sorcerer. And it had the weird Tangerine Dream music and stuff. So I thought people were like, wow, what's going on here? And then they go, and it's just really sort of gritty, old school hard guy movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, and nitroglycerin in a truck, in a bridge. It's awesome. So, well, that's cool. No, he was great. He was a great – actually, all of the guests that we had on as part of the film festival, the guys who came in studio from Sparks were awesome, told great stories, got to hang out with them. They were really, really kind. And Friedkin
just – they had nice things to say about you, too.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We had a great – you know, both of the interviews, the Friedkin one and the guys from Sparks, they were terrific. They were just great guys, and it was fun to have them on. So, well, congratulations on the success, man. I'm happy for both you guys. As you know, I think it's a great idea. My time is now being eaten up by a play called Black and Blue. So,
oh, apropos.
Yeah, uh-huh. yeah, exactly. So, like, a lot of my free time is going to be spent in rehearsals and stuff like that. So I'm going to miss some of the screenings, and I missed some stuff on Sunday, and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know what? I'm about to post on the Chicago Critics Film Festival Facebook page one of the short films that played Sunday morning, a movie called Catnip Egress to Oblivion, which is a sort of fake documentary about the dangers of catnip, and it's one of the funniest things you'll ever see. So, right, go to that Facebook page and check that out.
So you're going to put it up on the Chicago Film Critic Facebook page?
Yes.
Okay. So everybody go check that out. We'll try and get a link up on our Facebook page as well. All right. Congratulations to both of you guys, and we got some movies to talk about, so hang on. We got to get the movie reviews going here. If you want to jump in, it's 312. Oh, by the way, I want to ask you guys, because I did not see the zombie movie. Did you guys? The Rob Zombie movie?
Oh, that zombie movie. No, I thought you meant no.
You didn't see Lords of Salem? I didn't see it either. Colin?
No, I didn't even know where it was playing. It wasn't
either
listed on the Evanston Evanston Theater, so I didn't even bother to look for it.
It's at River East, I know that much, and I think it's at a few other places, including Webster. But yeah, if anybody saw the Rob Zombie horror film, The Lords of Salem, you can give us your bad review. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's what I've read about it. I don't know if you guys have read anything about it. But I've read that it is he really pulls back the brutality in this one. So
yeah, but I hear he goes hallucinogenic.
Right. Yeah, he gets all artsy. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, he gets all Terrence Malick-y.
Right.
So if you saw the movie, give us a call at 312-981-7200, the new Rob Zombie movie, The Lords of Salem. Did not get a chance to see it today. So and they didn't screen it for us ahead of time. So we were out of luck. The critics were kept away from the Lords of Salem. So we got other movies to talk about, including on-demand stuff, but the phone lines are open at 312-981-7200. Midnight Movie Reviews will continue. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower. And after midnight on Friday nights, it's Midnight Movie Reviews. And Colin and Eric, welcome back, guys.
Hello.
Okay, we cover the on-demand stuff as well. And Eric, I know that you saw one of them, and it's a film called Love, Sick, Love. And I'm looking at the cast list, and I love me some Jim Gaffigan.
Yes.
I love that guy. I think he's
awesome. Yeah, I do love Jim Gaffigan. He's in town this weekend, is he not?
Yeah, he's in town. Also, I was, you know what I was just watching, which I watch pretty regularly, and I love him in it so much, is Away We Go. He's so hilarious in that, and especially the energy that he's playing off of the way Allison Janney's playing it.
Right.
You know, and it's just, and that movie, by the way, that movie rules.
If
you have not seen Away We Go with Maya Rudolph, and John Krasinski, it is just a great film. It's actually my favorite Sam Mendes movie. It is.
And I agree with that.
It's such a beautiful, beautiful movie, and the songs are awesome, and the acting is good, and it's so funny. And it's got such a beautiful ending. My God. I mean, I love that movie so much, man. So anyway, Jim Gaffigan is in this Love, Sick, Love. Tell me about it. It's available on demand.
Okay. Well, this is a story of a young woman played by Katya Winter, who is very, very much on the lookout for the right man, for the perfect man. She's in a relationship with a guy who actually works with Jim Gaffigan. And these things seem to be happy. He seems to be getting what he wants out of the relationship. But when she says, "I love you," he doesn't really reciprocate. So
he doesn't even say ditto like Patrick Swayze.
No, he does. I was waiting every time someone does that and a guy doesn't respond. I wait for the ditto. Yeah, what an effect that movie has on us. Ghost. Yeah. So what's a girl to do when the guy doesn't say I love you? Well, you tie him up and you force him to live with your family and show him what a good life he could possibly have with her two kids that she didn't tell him about. So do you think this movie's a comedy or a thriller, Nick?
I'm going to guess thriller.
I think it's trying to be.
Yeah.
Because it's certainly not a comedy. It's certainly not really playing a satiric edge on that type of scenario or these types of movies. But it's not really a good thriller at all. Mm. Things kind of happen, and it kind of plays out like a real amateurish version of Misery. In a way.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But, like, her family is a little wacky, but they're also might be murderous, too, but it's not really a gore fest, and it never really finds a footing at all.
Oh, okay.
And it's kind of a waste of my time.
Okay. Love, sick love, forget it.
Yeah.
All right, we got a lot of movies to talk about. Eric, after the break, you got to tell us about Antiviral, okay?
Yeah.
So you're the only one who's seen it, so we got to get it. Colin, you haven't seen it, have you?
I have not.
Okay, I can't wait to see it because I know the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Nope.
In this case.
No way.
All right, so Colin, Eric, hang on. We got more movies to talk about, including the Tom Cruise sci-fi film Oblivion and Terrence Malick's new movie To the Wonder, all coming up on the Midnight Movie Reviews. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. Midnight Movie Reviews continue. Colin and Eric and I did not get a chance to see The Lords of Salem, Rob Zombie's new horror film. They obviously kept it away from the critics, like they've done with many of Rob Zombie's movies. So it snuck into town. We didn't get a chance to see it. So if you saw The Lords of Salem, and you can review it for us tonight on the Midnight Movie Reviews, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're live in the Allstate Studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower. And Eric, Colin, welcome back, guys.
Hello.
All right, Eric, tell us about Antiviral, which you can see exclusively at the beautiful Patio Theater at 6008 West Irving Park, Irving in Austin in Chicago. Beautiful theater. And Antiviral.
Okay. Well, this is the film directed and written by Brandon Cronenberg, who is David's son. It's a story of sometime in the future in society, there is a business that if you choose, you can go to. And if you really want to sort of really get close to your favorite celebrity, really get under their skin, you can purchase a virus that they have had. So if Kim Kardashian had a cold and you wanted to be part of that, you can go there and get injected with it, with the very same cold that she had running through her body. Sounds like a Cronenberg film, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
Yeah. So one of the gentlemen that works there is involved in a little bit of industrial espionage. He's actually injecting some of the viruses into his own body and taking them to a competitor so they can have them. How nice of him. Needless to say, this does not do wonders for his own body. And soon he discovers that one of the viruses he has injected belonged to a sort of a Britney Spears-like pop star. It turns out that she might have a virus that might be killing her. So he's carrying this thing around with him trying to figure out is where the virus came from. Is there murder involved with this pop star? All while trying to conceal the fact that he's stealing from his own company and all these crazy things that are happening. When you said that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, You ain't kidding.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not the Cronenberg of recent. This is the Brandon Cronenberg, the David Cronenberg of old, when he was really, really fascinated with, you know, this the machinations of the human body and what it can be put through and people's obsessions and things. And I think the film is very interesting. It's creepy. There are enough scenes of him eating like bad meat in the movie to make you go, oh yeah, Cronenberg directed this. The third act of the film leaves a little bit left to desire. I don't think it quite comes through with all of its ideas. And plot wise, if you're looking for something to sort of wrap everything up, look elsewhere. But like I said, I mean, the film is creepy, it's weird, it has some interesting ideas about celebrity, it has a number of the sort of Videodrome-like moments in the film that definitely keep old-school Cronenberg fans happy, and I do recommend it.
Okay, Antiviral, a nice weird film from the son of David Cronenberg, Brandon Cronenberg, and it is playing exclusively at the beautiful Patio Theater. And if just to go to the Patio Theater, I recommend that. So just to see the theater. Okay, let's talk, Colin. Let's talk about To the Wonder.
All right. Well, this tells the story of a man and a woman played by Ben Affleck and Olga Kurylenko, which, believe it or not, this is not the last time you'll hear that name tonight. and they meet in Paris. And then have a life together in Oklahoma, and that's where they start having problems. She has a daughter from another marriage that Affleck can't quite connect with, and she makes the acquaintance of a priest played by Javier Bardem, who's having his own crisis of faith. And Affleck finds himself getting back in touch with a childhood sweetheart played by Rachel McAdams, who isn't in the film very much. So that's the basic story, and this is the Terrence Malick movie, and like most of Malick's films, it's not really about constructing a nice, clean narrative so much as it is using, you know, cinema to create poetry. I guess I am a member of the Church of Malick, as Eric calls it. The Tree of Life, you know, was my number one film of 2011, remains my favorite film of this decade so far, and I know I understand, you know, it's still early, but it's, you know, going to be tough to beat for me. But I walked in with, you know, relatively modest expectations. I did not expect this film to be better than or as good as Tree of Life. I just hope I would see a pretty great Terrence Malick movie. And I got to say, this is as phoned in as a Terrence Malick can be. First of all, the turnaround time is the quickest he's ever had. It's 2 hours, or I mean, 2 years since Tree of Life.
It usually takes this guy, you know, 5 to 10 years to release a movie.
Yeah, well, I wish he would have taken another 5 years with this one, because I feel like this is a Terrence Malick movie that just goes through the motions of being a Terrence Malick movie. We got, the girl walking away from the camera and looking back at it while spinning around in, you know, in a wheat field in a nice dress. The guy is walking around, you know, Ben Affleck has hardly any dialogue in this film, and he looks completely confused. He looks like he's not sure what to do next. There are not any real sequences in this movie that I found particularly memorable. Usually, I mean, you know, in a Terrence Malick movie, there's usually one or two or three sequences that are, you know, like sweets that are just, you know, angelic and majestic, and, you know, you look forward to them when you see them again. This one just kind of meanders, you know, from one whispery voiceover montage to the next, and I can't tell the difference between any of these sequences. I understand that these, a lot of the critics are praising it or say, you know, oh, it's about faith, it's about, you know, love and all of its many forms and its many complexities. Okay, he's done this before. He did this, you know, he's covered these themes a lot better in movies like, you know, the New World and Tree of Life, and with a lot more conviction than I'm seeing here. And I know he's got like two other movies, you know, he's working on right now. And, you know, this is obviously the most prolific he's ever been in his career, just cranking these movies out. But I'm not seeing a whole lot of conviction here or a lot of passion. It's the least affected I've ever felt by a Terrence Malick movie. And I'm largely disappointed overall. So I cannot recommend this film.
Okay. Eric.
Well, Colin pretty much took the words out of my mouth for the last 35 years. I've been trying to tell people. But anyway, I do not subscribe to the Church of Malick. I'm not a card-carrying member of that. People, you guys know this. A lot of people who know me know this. Yet I like Tree of Life. So it kind of shows you how kind of really good that movie was that even a non-Terrence Malick person can like. This one is like Colin said, it's the old tricks. You know, if there's a lot of, you know, silence, there's narration, there's a lot of women spinning, there's wheat. You know, it's the same types of shots that we see. And I worked as overtime as I could possibly put in during a Terrence Malick film, especially after Tree of Life, when a second viewing of that film spoke to me more than the first viewing. So watching this movie, I was trying to, as Colin was saying, some critics are doing, trying to sort of piece together what he was going for as far as love and old love and new love and family and faith and the different types of love that we seek, trying to, you know, if there's really something here that's being spoken and preached to. And it's not there. It never comes together. All the stuff at Javier Bardem just feels like it's just there. Like here's the point I'm trying to make, and here's Javier Bardem as a priest. I think it's as base as some of the stuff that when, Nick, you've talked about Woody Allen stuff in the past, when you talk about how on the nose he can be sometimes when he's trying to make a dramatic point. I feel the exact same thing that Terrence Malick is doing here. So it looks pretty. So what? Every single one of Terrence Malick's films looks pretty. I will never fault the guy for that. The guy knows how to compose a shot and put it up on a big screen. But as far as the story is concerned with love and environment and faith and all these kind of stuff, the film is a failure to me.
And as a card-carrying member of the Malick Church, I have to say that this is the weakest film he's ever made. I kind of echo everything that you guys have said. I think I might have liked it a little bit more than both of you, because I think to watch a Terrence Malick movie, even as one as sort of weak and kind of a mess as this one, there are still moments of absolute beauty and like sort of breathtaking stuff. And this movie is full of that kind of stuff as well. It's got some really beautiful stuff. Now, I will say this. I saw it at home in my living room, so because it's on demand as well. And so I'm going to see it again, one, because in order to fully appreciate a Terrence Malick movie, I think one needs to see it on the big screen. That's just me. So I feel I was at kind of a disadvantage watching it in my stupid living room, you know. So, this is like, it's like Malick's greatest hits. You know what I mean? Like it's like a K, yep. It's like a K-Tel record of Terrence Malick. and he's not. I mean, there's really no path. And again, to this to be the follow-up to Tree of Life. And Colin, I'm with you. It's one of the best movies of the decade, no question about it. And a gorgeous movie, and moved me deeply. I think it's a gorgeous, beautiful piece of work that's profound, you know, and beautiful and moving. And to follow it up with kind of this thing, it just seems like, you know, it's one of those deals where a filmmaker who thinks he can get away with anything.
And he's making up for lost time. You know, he was absent for 20 years, and now he's like back in the game. And, you know, I don't know how old he is really, but, you know, he's probably looking at his life thinking, okay, I don't have much more time to make movies. I better crank this stuff out while I can.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of, you know, we'll see what the next few films bring, but, you know, the Tree of Life, you know, nobody could make a movie like Tree of Life in span of 2 years. You know,
no, of course not. And he's notorious for cutting his films and changing his movies up until the very minute that they're released. I mean, I mean, how many versions of New World were there? I mean, you know,
right.
They screened a version for the critics, you know, 3 weeks before it opened, and then a different cut came out. You know what
yeah.
I mean? And there's no tinkering involved in this movie whatsoever. What I've read about To the Wonder is that, you know, from the moment it was shot to the moment it was cut, he didn't go back and make a lot of changes. He didn't, and, you know, had it at film festivals ready to go in a reasonable and quick amount of time.
Well, he did cut out a whole storyline involving Rachel Weisz. She's supposed
right.
to be in this movie. She
right.
is on the cutting room floor. So
right.
there's that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't know how much different it would have made. I will say this, yeah. however. I think that the strongest stuff in the movie is the Javier Bardem stuff. I think it's the most interesting. I think maybe the closest to Malick's heart. The only time that the film kind of reaches some sort of depth. Outside of being just overtly beautiful, do you know what I mean?
But
I think Bardem is really good in it too. I think it's a very good performance, a really sad performance.
Yeah, I just feel like it's another movie.
Yeah.
I feel like that's another movie wedged into this other movie,
right?
You know,
and I
feel like it's not connected.
And you never really connect with the characters either. And I know that's not, you know, necessarily the case with a lot of Malick's movies. Although I have in the past, I connected with the kids in Tree of Life and with Brad Pitt's character, and there was a connection, you know what I mean? Like, there was an emotional
yeah.
connection. You understood what was going on. In The New World, I was completely connected with Colin Farrell and the girl and all of that stuff. And you know, he can be ethereal, and he could be, you know, spiritual and do all these beautiful, wonderful voiceovers and camera movements and stuff, and yet he was still able to get to an emotional core. There's no emotional core whatsoever in this movie. That you
yeah.
have no idea while they're, you know, suddenly they're like at each other's throats, and you know, you can barely hear the arguments because of the way it's mixed and the voiceovers, and you really don't know what the hell's going on between these two people.
Well, the women are so underwritten in the film too. I mean, like you said, I mean, there's that radical shift. It's just like all of a sudden the daughter's not happy being
right.
in the States, and
right.
then you know, all of a sudden, you know, they have to move back. I'm just like, well, wait, well, okay.
Yeah.
So who am I supposed to be feeling sorry for here? I mean,
right.
did Ben Affleck do something wrong, or is this girl just a little spoiled brat?
Right. I had no idea. I had
right.
no. And then there's like a visa thing that, you know, like that.
Right.
And it was like, what the hell, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, beautifully shot. Again, you know, top-notch cinematographer. He knows how to put the cameras. There are some sequences here that are really, really lovely. But, yeah, man, this is a massive disappointment coming from Terrence Malick. So. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower. We got one more movie to talk about. Before we do that, because we got to hit the news here, I wanted to ask you guys, what do you guys know about this TV series of Zombieland?
I just found out about it, like, yesterday.
Yeah, I had no idea.
I just found out about it when I went to a website and there was a banner ad for it, like just like about an hour ago. I had no idea.
I don't know who's behind it.
Nope.
I don't even know what it would. Do we know what network it's on? I mean,
I don't.
Nope.
I haven't seen an advertisement for it. I haven't bothered to look it up.
Well,
I haven't seen any reviews for it.
Yeah, I don't. Okay. Here's what it is. It's.
Oh, I think it's Amazon Original Pilot, Instant Video.
That's
what it looks like from the ad I'm looking at right now.
All right, and I don't know anybody who's involved in it. Eli Craig is the director.
They're all playing the same characters.
Yeah, they're all playing the same characters. Kirk Ward, Tyler Ross, Mira Walsh. I thought maybe you guys knew something about this.
Well, you know who Eli Craig is? He's the director. He directed Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh.
So there you go.
Oh, well.
Now we're interested.
Oh, okay. I don't have the Amazon Instant, but you can watch it online, right?
You watch it online.
Yeah. All right. So it's Amazon Instant Video. You can watch Zombieland, the series, if you're a fan of the movie Zombieland, which I think all three of us are.
It's from one of the original writers.
Okay. Well, I didn't even know about it. See, this is how
up to- And it looks like it's free.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's on Amazon Instant Video. It looks like it's nothing you have to pay for. I'm seeing here. So
all right, well, give it a shot. We'll see what happens. Let me know what you guys think.
Starting right now.
All right, here.
Go ahead.
Yeah, hold on a second. There's Colin and Eric, and we've got the news, and then we're going to review Tom Cruise's new film, Oblivion. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower. Coming up a little bit later on, we've got Straight Out of Context and Drunks in the News. Drunks in the News brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. Yes, and we got to finish up our movie reviews, the midnight movie reviews with Eric Childress and Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com. We do it every Friday night after midnight, and we're as thorough as possible, giving you all of the movie reviews that we possibly can, including stuff that's available on demand. Big movie this week, though, is the big Tom Cruise science fiction thriller called Oblivion. Eric, tell us about Oblivion.
Okay. Well, it is the year 2077, and Earth has been attacked by a group of aliens referred to as the Scavengers. Apparently, they have the brilliant plan of destroying our moon, which caused all sorts of earthquakes, tidal waves, and all the kind of stuff that would destroy the planet and just about all the population. All that's left on planet Earth after we nuked the aliens is Tom Cruise's character, Jack something. He's playing another Jack. And his job is basically to...
He's Jack Harper.
Jack Harper, there you go. His job is to basically scour the landscape, make sure that if there are no alien scavengers left trying to steal our precious fluids on Earth, known as the water, and also to repair
Thank you, Sterling Hayden.
You're welcome. You're welcome. It's been that kind of day. And also to repair the lovely drones that also scour the landscape, taking out aliens as they see fit. But things are not entirely as they seem. There are some discoveries that Tom Cruise begins to make, Jack Harper begins to make throughout the film that all of a sudden, you know, that he might not have all the facts on the true history of Earth's destruction. And this begins to come further into place as he meets an astronaut who is crash landed on the planet, played by Olga Korolenko from To the Wonder, as well as a group of surviving humans led by Captain Exposition himself, Morgan Freeman, who have some revealing information for Jack Harper, or at least tell him where he can go find that information. This is a type of film that you don't want to say too much more about the plot. For people who are going to be interested in finding out all of its secrets. It's even a spoiler alert to really go down the long list of other science fiction movies that this film is clearly borrowing from. And that can be fine. We talked last week about Danny Boyle's Trance, which I felt, you know, was borrowing, you know, became it was like four or five different movies in one. But at least took the approach in putting those varying styles and plot lines together in a very interesting way. Not so much with this one. This is a movie where all of its ideas are you're way ahead of whatever ideas it has, and yet it sort of is playing out like it believes it's the first one to come up with these ideas. The idea of a guy on Earth or someone left on Earth and the sort of the isolation that they're feeling, you know, this harkens back to films like Silent Running, more recently Moon, even Wall-E, so the film never really develops a great emotional connection with the Tom Cruise character, and the movie is so preoccupied in keeping its secrets in its pocket for as long as possible, that the audience, at least certainly I, grew very weary with it. I was hoping that the movie would eventually surprise me, or you throw some competent action at me, which it never really did. And by the time it sort of gets around to all of its revelations about 90 minutes in, then it just sort of gives you a deluge in, like, basically one monologue and then a couple of flashbacks, you know, and which are all not all that surprising at all. I think it's one of Tom Cruise's least interesting performances. I mean, this guy can definitely, you know, hold one's attention. He has that kind of presence and charisma, but I don't think they've written much of a story around him to sort of give this character the emotional resonance that I think it's going for. Morgan Freeman is, like I said, he's Captain Exposition in the film. There's really no sort of there's not a lot there with Olga Korolenko's character. I found Andrea Riseborough's character, who is Tom Cruise's or Jack Harper's assistant. They make an effective team, as we keep being told throughout the movie. So this is directed by Joseph Kosinski, who did the Tron sequel. This is his second film. And that also was a film that I think was really in love with ideas that it never really fleshed out. This film's a little bit better than the Tron film, but I left feeling rather empty and very unsatisfied.
Okay. Colin?
Yeah, I can't really add too much more to that except, the movie is borrowing heavily from, you know, a lot of other films, and even the score borrows from other films, especially Nolan's Batman movies. Almost plagiarism in a way. Like Eric said, the problems come not with, you know, the fact that it's derivative, but that the fact that, you know, when the story starts to unfold and the twists come about, they turn out to be not all that interesting. They allude to, you know, flashbacks early on in the film to another time and another place. And it's not that hard to figure out where those flashbacks are going to take us. It's like the rest of the movie. We're not seeing anything new here, either in style or in the landscape or in the storyline. I didn't have a bad time watching Oblivion. I think visually, I think it's pretty terrific. I liked the world that was created here. I think the way they created it was interesting. I just didn't have a memorable time watching it either. So, I can't quite recommend it.
Okay, I found the first 80 minutes of this movie to be an absolute chore. You mentioned Wally. At one point, he even finds a plant.
Yep.
And I was like, what the hell? I mean, is he going to watch Hello, Dolly now?
And at one point, he does end up in Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah. It was completely derivative. And to me, there's no conflict in the first almost 90 minutes of this film. It just kind of goes through the motions. They play a little Zeppelin at one point, which I liked, and, you know, visually outstanding. It's a beautiful looking film, and the special effects are top notch. But you got to give me more than that. And yes, again, you could count on both hands and your feet, you know, how many movies this is derivative of, how many sci-fi movies that it's derivative of, and who did these things much better. But I gotta say, when that revelation comes, and it's not that I didn't, like you guys, didn't see the direction it was going in, but I think from that moment on, I think the last 45 minutes of this movie is pretty great, and I think the whole thing kicks into gear, and I can't say what scene, but there is a specific scene that happens that where I think there's a revelation that happens, and at that point the movie kicks into gear. There's finally conflict. There's finally something interesting happening. The action sequences I think get better. There's this set piece that happens after the revelation, where they're being chased, you know, by the pods. I think it's a really beautifully shot sequence with good special effects. Cruise somehow, I think, in the last 40, 45 minutes of the movie, becomes Tom Cruise. And for the first 80 minutes, you're absolutely right. It's the least interesting performance that Tom Cruise is ever giving, and I'm including Cocktail. And I really don't think there's anything going on in the movie. I thought the movie was an absolute chore during the first, like, hour and a half or hour and 20 minutes. If you can actually sit through 80 minutes of this movie, I think the payoff is really nice, and I think it's I felt emotionally satisfied at the very end at the during the final sequence, and I thought a lot of the action sequences were very cool leading up to that. I thought there was a really interesting use of Melissa Leo in it. I enjoyed that. But yeah, I mean, okay, I'm gonna kind of recommend it almost because I think last 40 to 45 minutes to me, it really kicked into gear and I really enjoyed it. But it just took a hell of a long time to get there. So I'm borderline between 2.5 and 3 stars.
See, it's funny that you bring up that one, the scene that we can really not talk about.
Right.
Where really, you know, he sort of has that sort of that come to Jesus moment.
Yeah.
That's the moment where I kind of gave up.
Really?
I was waiting for that moment the entire movie. I'm like, this movie's going to go here, right? It's going to go here.
Yeah.
And it does.
Yeah.
And it goes that moment, and I immediately started thinking about the other movie that it's completely ripping that off from.
Yeah.
And how beautifully it's done in that movie.
Yeah. I can understand that, but I had the polar opposite experience. I was just like checking my cell phone and my watch during the first part of the movie. I was like, oh my God. And then when that happened to me, like stylistically, it got more interesting. There was a lot more urgency in the action sequences. There was finally conflict in the movie because there's like, there's finally conflict after almost 90 minutes. And I, you know, like I said, I think the action sequences picked up and I think it led to a pretty satisfying emotional ending. I like the way it ended. And when it was over, I was like, well, that wasn't too bad. I had to forget about the first 80 minutes. So I don't know, but that's where I stand on it. But I will say this, that the first 80 minutes, like I said, oh my God.
You know, hearing you talk about it, it just occurred to me that, you know, a lot of the movies that we mentioned that it's derivative of, I think there's a lot of parallels here to Vanilla Sky.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of similar things going on in this movie that happened in Vanilla Sky.
And which is a much better movie. I mean,
it's a terrific movie.
Yeah, a great film. Yeah. Well, anyway, I don't know. I don't know what to see. And did you guys see it in the giant IMAX deal?
Yeah.
And in 3D and all that stuff?
Not in 3D. I don't think it's in 3D.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we only saw it in just regular IMAX.
I saw it at the Davis last night. So, you know, I mean, they've got their digital projection. So it looked great. I just don't know. Is IMAX the way to go if people are going to spend money on it?
Yeah, I think so.
It's not just money that's the way to go. I mean, getting the Navy Pier is a trek, you know. It's a whole other hassle. No, not quite worth it. I mean, it's still going to be the same movie either way.
Right. Okay. I just didn't know because the effects look pretty damn good on the screen I was watching it on last night. You know, so I don't know. Again, if you can trek through the first 80 minutes, if you can make it through the first 80 minutes of this movie, I think there's a payoff. So anyway, and of course that's not the most stellar review that you can give a movie. If you can make it through the first 80 minutes,
Show up at the 80-minute mark.
Right. Exactly.
It's like reviewing Irreversible almost. You know, you think it's in that first 80 minutes.
Oh man! All right, what do we got next week, Eric? What do we got?
Well, we got Pain and Gain next week.
Oh, God.
Pain and Gain opens. Well, I mean, we hate the director, but we like the cast, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We're agreed on that. Okay, well, here's one we think we'll all agree on. Mud.
Yeah, that's next week.
Film opens next week.
That's not going to open wide, right? I'm sure.
No, I don't think wide. I think it might be a little wider than some, but not wide.
Okay.
And we also got The Big Wedding.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You know, for those people who are interested in seeing perhaps the worst movie poster in the history of movie posters, like it looks like something. I looked at it and I'm like, did The Onion come up with this movie poster? This is literally the most horrible looking movie poster I've ever seen. Why the hell would anyone, upon seeing this movie poster, decide to see that movie?
Yeah, remind me, I have an off-air story about that for you.
About the poster?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you will appreciate it.
And again, this thing...
I know what he's talking about.
And this thing, by the way, was delayed, I don't know, how many times was this?
Well, just once. It was
just once?
To come on October before De Niro was in Silver Linings Playbook, so I'm sure he's really happy about this. So and then this is from the writer of The Bucket List.
God almighty. Yeah. All right. Well, we got a lot to look forward to next week, gentlemen.
Yeah.
And we will talk to you guys. Now, Colin, we're going to talk to you in a little bit.
Yes.
Okay.
I will be here.
All right, Eric. Thanks, man. See you later. And Colin, we'll hear from you in a little bit, okay?
All right.
All right. Here's why. Colin Suter is going to be our drunk reader tonight. He's going to take on one of our drunk stories. And he'll read that coming up a little bit later on when we do Drunks in the News.